This is Amanda Cooper, and with me today I have Eric Harrison. He is the political director for the Marcy's Law for Georgia. We also have Patrix as well as Patrica here to talk about Marcy's Law from a victim's perspective. Welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit about who you are and about your involvement with this organization.
So my name's Eric. I became the political director for Marcy's Law for Georgia back in July. Marcy's Law has been active in Georgia since, I believe, 2015. The last couple of sessions, our team has expanded so that we have a larger presence in Georgia last year and this coming session. And my goal is to get as many advocates on behalf of Marcy's Law to talk to their legislators, get involved in the process, and see what it's like to amend the Constitution in Georgia. There are three hurdles involved. You have to pass the House, or the Georgia House with a two-thirds majority, the Georgia Senate with a two-thirds majority, and then you have to go onto the ballot and have 50% plus one person in the state of Georgia vote in favor of changing the Constitution. So it's a little bit of a more difficult process than most issues trying to get passed at the Georgia legislature since we are trying to change the Constitution.
Well, hi, I'm Patrix Cody, and I am a victim, and I am here to advocate for Marcy's Law because our family went through a tragedy of losing our brother. So we're here to speak on behalf of our family in helping with Marcy's Law for Georgia. Yes, and I am her sister, twin sister, Patrica. We are both here to advocate for Marcy's Law because we want to make sure that others in Georgia do not have to suffer or go through what we have went through.
When we talk about Marcy's Law, the average person doesn't really understand exactly what is it. When I was doing the research, I was really impressed with how well it is organized. And I was shocked to learn that Georgia is one of 15 states that hasn't already made this a law in their state. You talked about the hurdles, Eric, in regards to getting this law passed in the state of Georgia. Why wouldn't a state not want this law passed in their state to help protect victims of violence?
You know, so Georgia leads in so many, many other areas in the country as well as regionally. And all of our neighbors have adopted some sort of constitutional protection for the victims of crimes. You know, everyone is familiar with the Miranda rights. We would like everyone to also be equally familiar with Marcy's rights. What we're trying to do is basic stuff in Georgia, the right to notification, to know when there are hearings, when there are changes in status of custody of the accused or convicted. So if someone's moved around, that victim knows where their victimizer is going, or if there's a bond hearing, they can be present. The right to be heard so that they can be an active part of the process. That doesn't necessarily mean that their wishes are going to be overriding the defense attorneys, but at least they can make their opinion known to the prosecutor during the process. The right to be present throughout the process. In some cases, victims haven't been able to be present throughout the process. So the ability to actually sit in the courtroom and see what's going on with their own case, and then the right to be treated with dignity and respect throughout the whole process. This is something that is a very bipartisan measure in Georgia. And when we passed the Senate last year, we passed 50-4. Every single Democrat and the vast majority of Republicans in the state Senate voted for it. You had everyone from Vincent Fort to Josh McCoon supporting it. So a broad spectrum of political ideology and thought within the state of Georgia.
So basically you're saying that Marcy's Law can be passed in the state of Georgia with the right people in place in the Senate and the House to help change the Constitution here. Mm-hmm. And when you say a lot of the things that it does for people, one thing that struck out is dignity and respect. Mm-hmm. I don't quite think that people understand why you have to have a law to demand dignity and respect for the victims of the people who have been victims of violence. Can you elaborate on that? Or could some of the victims elaborate on how they did not feel like their dignity and respect was given to them in this current situation? And tell us a little bit about your stories as well.
Our brother, he was a Desert Storm personnel, veteran of the United States Army. And when he came home, he wanted to help others. And so he was helping someone, and he was murdered in the process. And we felt that when we were going through the process, the court arrangements and everything, that we had to prove to everyone who he was, the type of person that he was, where they were really making the guy that murdered my brother look like a great person, but then trying to, you know, find fault on my brother. But when they found out that he was helping feed the homeless and the needy and giving people rides in order to get to their jobs and other places. So the dignity was definitely not there. We felt that we were being prosecuted when we should have been, you know, had some compassion or sympathy towards us. We weren't able to really be a voice throughout the trial at all.
So, Eric, when they talk about compassion and empathy for their being victims, how do Marcy's Law help victims?
So by getting a constitutional level protection passed in a state, it gives the victim equal standing throughout the court system with the accused or later on in the process if they are convicted, the convicted. Right now, Georgia has a really great statute called the Crime Victims Bill of Rights, but there's no enforcement mechanism in that statute. So by adopting Marcy's Law at the constitutional level, there is an enforcement mechanism that if a victim's rights are violated, if they aren't notified of a hearing, if they aren't treated with dignity or respect, if they aren't allowed to be present, then they can go to a judge and say, hey, this is what happened. And then the judge can make a determination as how best to proceed. If the accused or the convicted's rights are violated, and say it's an evidentiary hearing, then that evidentiary hearing will get held over again. Same kind of thing with Marcy's Law. If a victim is not notified then of a hearing, then that hearing should be held over again when that victim can be present, or at least so that they're notified so they can make a good faith effort to try and be there.
I see here on your website it says that in 2016, the GBI reported nearly 39,000 violent crimes and more than 340 crimes overall just here in the state of Georgia. Is that accurate?
To the best of my knowledge, those are the most recent statistics that are available.
Wow.
And you know, no one walks out the door one day wanting to be a victim. A lot of folks, you know, this is something that happens to them. They've already been victimized once, whether it's domestic violence, if they lose their brother to a random act of violence, whether it's rape. You know, there are all sorts of possibilities for someone to become a victim, and there's no reason that the system that is in place to help protect that victim should victimize them a second time. So that's one of the things that Marcy's Law is trying to keep from happening so that folks don't fall through the cracks. They're treated with dignity and respect. They're informed of what's going on with their case. They're able to participate and be present and be heard so that they can take some steps to get control of their own life back. No rapist should have more rights than the person they raped going through the process, and we're just trying to equalize that footing so that the victim's rights are at the same constitutional level of protection as the accused.
Yes.
I absolutely agree. No rapist should have more rights than the victim. Tell us a little bit about the origin of Marcy's Law. I know there's a story behind this particular law.
So Marcy's Law is named after Marcy Lee Nicholas. She was murdered in 1983. I think she had one quarter left at UC Santa Barbara. She was going to go into special education. And she broke up with her boyfriend. At the time, her boyfriend was not happy being an ex. And he was threatening to kill himself. So she went over to help prevent that from happening. And he killed her instead. When our founder, Dr. Nicholas, and his mother were coming home from her graveside, they stopped at a grocery store on the way home, and they ran into Marcy's killer at the grocery store. And he accosted and harassed them then. He would later on throughout the proceedings, he would continue to harass them as long as he was out on bond. He was later convicted of Marcy's murder, but throughout the trial, there were times where Marcy's own mother was not allowed to be present. And from that moment on, that's when Dr. Nicholas and his mother started to get involved with the victims' rights movement. A couple years prior, there was actually a presidential task force or presidential commission established to look into the rights of victims. And one of the things that came out of that task force was a recommendation that all states should adopt some sort of constitutional level protection for victims of crime. And they even went so far as to say that the federal constitution should be amended to include a provision for crime victims' rights. And so you've had presidential politicians from Ronald Reagan to Bill Clinton that have been supportive of this issue. So again, very broad spectrum of ideology between the two of them. And that's where it got started. When Marcy's Law first passed in California and Illinois, I believe it was 2009. And since then, you know, there are now 35 states that have some sort of constitutional level protections for victims. Marcy's Law, I believe, is active in 11 states right now, trying to either establish some base level constitutional protections like we are in Georgia, or trying to improve them like we're trying to do in Florida and North Carolina. Both of our bordering states have something on the books, but we think it can be better. So we're trying to improve that protection for victims in those states as well.
Well, and you know, this is personal for me, so that's why I'm glad the victims are here as well. In my own family, I've had a situation where a female was murdered by her husband, and the child had to witness this. He is a victim, so he lost his mother and his father. Wow. And when his father gets out, he has no rights against what his dad will do to him. So I understand the concept of it, and I really hope our listeners really grab hold to what Marcy's Law is, and when it is on the books, to when it's on the ballot to vote, that they will vote in favor of having it be a part of the Constitution.
Correct. So we've already made it through the Senate. We made it through the Senate last year. Again, 50-4. There were only four people that opposed it.
Who were the four people?
Senator Renee Unterman out of North Gwinnett, Senator Brandon Beach out of North Fulton and Eastern Cherokee County, Senator Bill Heath, who I believe is out of Paulding County, and then Senator William Ligon, who's out of Southeast Georgia down near Brunswick and Waycross. They're all four Republicans, so all 19 Democrats, I believe, is the current makeup of the Senate, voted for it, and the rest of the Republicans. The Senate at that point didn't have a full 56 members. Judson Hill had stepped down to run for Congress, so his seat wasn't filled. So 50 votes out of 55 that were able to vote voted in favor and said this was important. And our sponsor, Senator John Kennedy out of Macon, did a really great speech on the floor of the Senate, which is also on our website. So you can see how passionate he is to get this through. So right now we are in the Georgia House. We're in the Judiciary Non-Civil Committee, since this deals with crimes and crime victims. Once we get out of the Georgia House Committee for Non-Civil, we will then go to the House Rules Committee, which hopefully will then put us on the floor or on the calendar for a full floor vote this session in the House. But if we get our two-thirds majority in the House, then it bypasses the governor's desk because it's a constitutional amendment, and it goes straight to the ballot in November.
Okay.
And in November, that is when everyone will get the chance to go out and vote for Marcy's Law. It will be down at the end of the ballot, so I would encourage voters to keep going to that last page. That's where all the constitutional amendments are. You know, the governor's race will be at the top of the ballot. Keep going to the bottom, and you'll find Marcy's Law.
Now, Patrix and Patrika, you bring a different story to this conversation. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about your brother.
My brother, the oldest of the three kids, he decides to go into the military to, you know, follow in his father's footsteps because he believes in helping people. He believes in fighting for his country. So he was in the military. He came out of the military as a veteran. He was a veteran with a disability, was in the Gulf War, and just a giver. He wanted to help women that were, you know, single moms and people that, you know, suffered with disabilities. And he was such a helper. And, I mean, he was the type of guy that would see someone walking and he would just pick them up on the side of the road and help them out. So it was, you know, a time where he seen someone that needed help, a ride to and from work that did not have a vehicle. The assailant said that he did not want to be bothered. He did not want anyone to bother him or knock on the door to pick up the person my brother was helping out for no reason, was, you know, approached and was gunned down. Imagine our family so upset, like our life was torn completely apart. And, you know, and he was such a good person, such a loving person, and would help anyone. Imagine going through a court system and you not knowing that, you know, that this person that has gunned your family member down for no reason whatsoever is out on the streets, and you run into them while you're out. You know, my sister ran into this person out. Imagine how she felt. You know, it was devastating for us, you know.
Let's just be clear. This happened here in Atlanta?
Yes, this was here in Atlanta.
And where at in Atlanta?
DeKalb County. It was okay. In DeKalb County.
And you ran into the person who gunned down your brother out on the street.
Yes. Very scary. Very scary moment. I was just out at a restaurant, and I didn't feel that I really had time to grieve, you know, because I was fearful for my own life, for my family's life. So you get in that mode of protection. It was several threats made towards our family during the hearing, but he was out on bond, and you know, you think you're safe, but you never know, you know, what can happen. And, you know, just running into him, first fear set in, of course. Nervousness, I mean, I just shut down. I didn't know what to do because I didn't feel that the system would protect me or my family. And this person is capable of getting to you. I mean, it's really scary. It's really scary. And the protection should be set in place for us victims.
And this are the benefits of having Marcy's Law in the state of Georgia.
Yeah.
And you're fearful for your life because you don't know what this person will do to you once they're out. You don't even know when they're out, where they're at. You have no clue, and no one gives you any rights because you technically wasn't victimized. So this is an excellent law. Now, I do have a few questions from a victim's perspective that I'd like to ask you, Eric. First of all, will this law protect everyone and the family if the person returns and threatens everyone in the house? Will Marcy's Law do that?
So what Marcy's Law does is by making sure that victims are notified of what's going on, that simple act of notification can give a lot of peace of mind. And if the family or the family of the victim or the victim themselves need to take certain actions to make sure they're safe, they at least have the heads up of knowing, okay, there is a bond hearing, there is a possibility of my victimizer being released. What do we need to do to take care of ourselves if there's anything that needs to be done? Or, you know, just knowing when that hearing is going to be, that victim and their family can voice their opinion to the prosecutor and say, look, we don't want to be traumatized all over again, traumatized all over again. Can we keep our victimizer in custody until the trial's over? So they can at least make sure that their opinion is heard and they can have some sort of input on the process.
Which is very important. Now, the second question is, will this go on my record and my future employers be able to pull it and see what has happened in my past and hold it against me? And these are questions from victims that when we expressed our desire to do this interview, they had questions as well. So again, the question is, will this go on my record and my future employer be able to pull it and see what has happened in my past and hold it against me?
So I'm not an attorney. I will preface my answer with that. I don't see any reason why this would affect employment. The only court that I know in the state of Georgia that has a really robust online record system is Cobb County Superior Court. And with a lot of the domestic violence cases that go through Cobb County Superior Court, a lot of those documents you can't access online. So if there is a reason that you need to have access to personal details, you actually have to go to the court itself to pull it. So there's not a database that anyone, or that I know of, that anyone would be able to access on that kind of issue.
Okay.
So I don't think it would have any effect.
The third question is, how can I protect my identity and protect myself and my children from shame and ridicule?
That's a good question. That was a big, huge concern with my parents.
Yes.
That's why we stand in the gap for that, because people have opinions. And
yes,
people are going to try to come to a conclusion why certain things happen. Stereotypes, you know, are out there. So that is a big concern.
The fourth question is, will I get access to the perpetrator's information so that I'll know where they're at all times to make myself feel safer?
So there is a great system in Georgia called Georgia Vine. Unfortunately, it is not active in all 159 counties. It is only in 7. So Core Metro, Atlanta, Prime Counties, and Athens-Clark County. That is an automated system that is really great at notifying victims about custody hearings. So if there's going to be a change in status of custody of the accused, or convicted, depending on where in the pipeline that individual is, then that victim will be notified either via email, automated phone call, text message. There's a lot of capability within the Georgia Vine system. Outside of the core metro Atlanta counties, there are 45 judicial circuit or districts in Georgia. They all do things a little bit differently, but they are all supposed to notify victims about hearings, about changes in custody status. If the convicted is moved from one facility to another, they're able to know. I know one victim that carries around the card that has the phone number he can call to find out where the person is that murdered his mother. So there is a system in place. It could be more robust, and hopefully with Marcy's Law, and once it gets passed, that more judicial districts and more counties will adopt the Vine process to make it easier to notify victims. But it is fairly easy if you are the victim to call and find out where the accused or convicted is in custody if they move from one location to another, or if they are released.
The last question is, if I have to move and be relocated, are there any federal funds or programs that will help me and my family get our lives back together?
So again, not an attorney and more of a political person here in Georgia. My understanding is that would be handled through the federal marshals. I don't know of any funding or programs off the top of my head, but I'm sure there is something that would exist to help that victim out if they have to move. I know that in Georgia we have the Criminal Justice Coordinating Council that exists to help. You know, if a victim has hospital bills because of their assault, or if their family member is murdered, there is some funding within the state of Georgia to help out that victim or that victim's family with funeral costs and hospital bills and that kind of stuff. But I don't know exactly how that process works.
Also, give us some information if people want to learn more about Marcy's Law for themselves or for a loved one and maybe even be a part of the movement.
Sure. So the easiest way to learn more about Marcy's Law or to get involved is to go to our website. There's a petition that you can sign there. Right now, I think we've got 10,500 people that have signed that petition. Our website is ga.marcyslaw.us. So it is ga.marcyslaw.us. They can sign our petition if they're supportive. By doing so, you'll get an email from me shortly after you sign it to see if you want to get involved as a volunteer.
Well, we thank you so much for your time. If you are a crime victim here in Georgia, you are not alone. We encourage you to sign the petition at ga.marcyslaw.us. That's ga.marcyslaw.us. Also, you can visit their Facebook page at Marcy's Law GA. That's MarcysLawGA. I'm Amanda Cooper, and that's the end of our show.